Hey there, Boston. This is Noah Barney from North Attleboro. This year, I will be running not just one marathon, but I'm attempting to complete all six world major marathons. And I'm proud to run the 2024 Boston Marathon to support Boston Scores, an amazing nonprofit that uses soccer and poetry to inspire and empower youth. As a former collegiate soccer player, I am honored to be part of the Boston Scores Marathon team and support free after-school and summer learning programs for 1,500 local students each year. Learn more and support my run today at BostonScores.org/Noah.
B-Pod Studios.
Here are Zolak and Bertrand.
Where else does that happen?
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Zolak and Bertrand on this Wednesday afternoon. We have not breaking news, but an interesting tidbit that just came down, Zoe. Just we became aware of this 15 minutes ago. Henry McKenna, the Patriots Wire, speaking with Julian Edelman.
Yeah.
Who says, staying in shape, you never know.
Tampa.
During an appearance at the Sunset Sports Media Festival in Croatia. Don't ask.
Okay.
I don't know. Edelman addressed the potential for a return to playing. I don't know. We'll see. That's that's called a little teaser. We'll see. We're staying in shape, but you never know.
Big teaser. Is that a opposite?
He says it would only be with the Patriots, though.
Is that that's opposite a big teaser?
Well, that's okay.
I know he's got a little Foxborough for everything going.
He said, I'd probably go back to the Patriots. I love the Patriots. Foxborough forever.
What did that mean? What's that P word before he said Patriots? I'd probably
go back to the Patriots. I love the Patriots. Foxborough forever.
You should have said, I'd only go back to the Patriots if that was the case. Foxborough forever.
Yeah.
You don't think his best friend could talk him into playing down
the south? Unless they didn't want him. And he were free to go wherever he wanted, and he was dead set on playing football again.
I honestly think they wouldn't want him.
The Patriots wouldn't want him.
Because I think, hear me out on this. Like, I would want.
I would love to hear you out, because we've been talking about their need for like a true slot receiver and who might be able to do it, as opposed to a guy who could absolutely step in day one and do it.
All right, last segment, you read the name of receivers that are available here. And I said, okay, they have a plethora of receivers. A lot of receivers there in the huddle with a young quarterback, year number two, Mac Jones, stepping into that huddle. Julian Edelman's in that huddle. How does that affect everybody else? If I'm Mac Jones, like, oh, my God, Edelman's here. I got to get the ball to Edelman. What if Edelman can't win in space? Now, all of a sudden, you know, it takes him out of his progression.
Now you're making him out to be Odell Beckham Jr.
Nope. I think he gets in the huddle, and I think Mac will go through progressions according to what he sees. And whoever gets the ball, gets the ball. I don't think he has any favorites. He did have a nice rapport with Jacoby Myers.
What's wrong with having if he's able to deliver on those passes anywhere close to what Brady was,
right,
and you've got the chain movers? Oh, for years I came to understand and believe what you taught me about Edelman was that
Edelman.
He was the motor.
Love him.
He was the guy that drove the offense.
Yep.
No matter how good Gronkowski was, no matter how good James White was, no matter what Tom Brady did, it went through Edelman. He was the motor.
Yeah.
So if you could get just some of that back, and Mac Jones could do some of what Brady did, what's the problem?
I think he'd be on a pitch count, and there would be a dependability on him as the season would get on to where, okay, what if the knee goes on week 10? Now all of a sudden you don't have Jules. And you've conditioned a quarterback to run the offense this way where it's Edelman base. He's the cog. He's the key. I love the guy. He's the stick mover.
Well, what's the cog now?
I think it's everybody's the cog now.
Then and that's not a cog.
That's why you're
different. That's Cogswell Cogs.
You just said, what's the offense going to look like? I think we don't know. I think the curiosity and the unknown of the offense is what can potentially help them. As opposed to, okay, we got Edelman. Guess what we're doing? We're going to play inside combo coverage. We're going to bring the safety down. He's going to inside him. We're going to bring the nickel over. He's going to got him outside. We're going to double Edelman, and we're going to single up Bourne, and we're going to single up Aguilar. Go win.
You bring a guy like Edelman in if you feel like you're on the verge of winning a Super Bowl.
Patriots are not on the verge of winning a Super Bowl.
You spot them on pitch count in Tampa.
Right. That's the fit.
Or elsewhere. Or Rams.
Sure.
Loaded team.
Well, if you're so dead set on the Patriots having enough guys and being able to work with what they got, where do you think they have them ranked in the pass catchers in the NFL?
Well, I don't think people respect them that much at all. Okay. So if it's 1 to 32, I would say below middle of the pack, which would put them around 18, 19, 20.
Yeah, it sounds about right.
Yep.
That's where they should be.
All right. If Edelman really wanted to come back and he could play, I think that you absolutely say, okay, come on in. Let's see how it goes. Let's take a look. I don't see how it can hurt you. I don't see how it can hurt Mac Jones' development. I don't see how it can hurt the
What's
offense.
He been out 2 years or 1 year? 2 years.
2 years. Right?
Last year he played was with Cam, right, because he had that great game against Seattle. Yep. The two big catches. Yeah.
Yeah, a year and a half.
Year and a half.
So now it's getting to the point where, okay, maybe I missed the game a little bit. And it's good to put that out there. And maybe the off-field stuff's not going as great as I thought it was going to go.
Oh.
See, this is where, yeah, your pride's... What's that? What's the name of that? Not Full Metal Jacket. It's the name of the movie, the fight movie. When you decide
Rocky.
No.
Fight Club.
No. With Marcellus, remember, like, when you decide to get up, when you want to get up off that mat, that's pride bleeping with you.
Oh, Reservoir Dogs.
No, John Travolta's in it.
Grease.
Saturday Night Fever?
Jesus Christmas. Come on, help me out on this. You know what I'm talking about.
No, I don't. If
Phenomenon.
I did, I would help you.
The movie I had to keep watching. I didn't know what was going on.
Phenomenon. That's it.
No, not Phenomenon.
So it turns out, spoiler alert, he has a brain tumor. So... John Travolta, I can't.
They go in the diner and they stick him up, everybody. Put your
Seinfeld.
On. No,
in a diner.
Why can't I think of the name of the movie?
Pulp Fiction.
Yes, thank you.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh,
Pulp Fiction.
I can't believe that's the route we took to get to Pulp Fiction.
Right. John Travolta's name was Jules in it, right?
I think it actually. You know what? I think you're right.
No.
That is a
Samuel L. Jackson is Jules.
Oh, that's right. Say what again?
Okay. All right.
What?
Finally, last Patriots story here today from Zach Cox. In his mailbag, he wants to know, are people underestimating, or someone asks if people are underestimating the Patriots? Don't you feel like this team's better than people think because Mac will be better? I just got this feeling people are underestimating this draft and their roster. Zach Cox says, I can see both sides of the argument. I don't believe the Patriots roster got better this offseason. If anything, it got slightly worse, preach on. That doesn't bode well for their chances, but it doesn't mean they can't deliver a better on-field product than last year's team. Because if Jones takes another step toward true stardom and Devontae Parker stays healthy and they get bounce back seasons from Jonnu Smith and Nelson Agholor, then yes, it's a lot of ifs, but they could be underestimated. Do you think they're underestimated right now, Zoe?
Not really. I think they're right where expectations put them because of, you know, the turnover on the coaching staff, the uncertainty there. Josh McDaniels is gone. You know, changing the offense.
The coaching doesn't...
We don't know how it's going to react, but they let them go early, which tells me Bill's happy with the way things are trending here. You don't just cancel practices because everybody's there. Your quarterback's there. This isn't like Brady 2 years ago, 3 years ago, where Tom's out there. The hell we doing with the last 2 days or 2 days? We don't need them. You know, let's just go to Fenway Park or let's go do a fun event. I think Bill seems content with the work that was put in. Where was more work put in this offseason than we know? Like, are they really that much on the same page that they're ready to
what, like on
rock and roll
and
into
stuff?
Camp? What's that?
What, like on uniforms and
I
stuff?
I don't know, yeah. Oh, God, I hope they can't.
I mean...
They are the worst, aren't they?
Would the Celtics
all black.
Work would be put in that they are holding back on that has not gotten out there? Just give me an example of one thing they could have been working on that we don't know about. I don't know either.
I don't know.
Okay.
Isaiah Wynn hasn't been here all season. All of a sudden, he's only got one practice under his belt for camp. Like, we're good to cancel everything else? I guess so.
And it doesn't. It seems like they're estimated about where they should be based on where they finished last year and what they've done this offseason and what they haven't done.
And more importantly, what's happened in the rest of the conference. The rest of the conference has gotten better.
Of course, look right next door. You know, look what happened to to you and your games against the Bills last year. Look who they picked up down in Miami. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Say what you want about the Jets.
Say what you will about the Jets. They're doing it the right way
again. They're doing it the right way again. They're trying to build through the draft. They're not. We're gonna get every free agent available. No,
they'll screw it up. Don't worry.
They will screw it up. But how do you not get a little better than what you were last year?
It's hard to be much worse.
Well,
not all that hard when the other teams that you're going to be playing twice a year have gotten better.
So, and it's not just the division, the rest of the conference.
I mean, you already lost to them. So, if the score is even worse, it still counts as a loss. So maybe it doesn't factor in all that much.
It's going to be tough. I mean, we open up twice, first 2 weeks on the road. Like, you're away from Gillette. You got to go play on the road. That's not an easy thing to do.
I dropped the ball on something. This is a nice prize, too. I was supposed to give this away a few minutes ago, but caller 10 right now. May I do it right now, T-Bone? Pride Motor Group Hotline, 617-931-0985. Gets the prize pack from swingjuice.com, including approved, licensed merchandise of the U.S. Open. I was wearing my Swing Juice U.S. Open shirt yesterday.
I almost wore mine today, but I didn't.
Okay. Well, I wore mine yesterday.
Nice shirt. It's a
nice
really,
shirt.
Really nice shirt.
Nice shirt. You want
hit
one?
Hit me up. Yeah. I want one.
What do you get? XL? You're tall.
Yeah. You got an extra large tall?
I need a McTully.
Yeah. Dakota, make that happen.
Swing Juice polo, hat, and more. To see their entire collection of merchandise, go to swingjuice.com. Caller 10 right now. Pride Motor Group Hotline, 617-931-0985. Back to the Celtics after this on Zolak and Bertrand.
Hey there, Boston. This is Noah Barney from North Attleboro. This year, I will be running not just one marathon, but I'm attempting to complete all 6 world major marathons. And I'm proud to run the 2024 Boston Marathon to support Boston Scores, an amazing nonprofit that uses soccer and poetry to inspire and empower youth. As a former collegiate soccer player, I am honored to be part of the Boston Scores Marathon team and support free after-school and summer learning programs for 1,500 local students each year. Learn more and support my run today at Boston Scores. .org/Noah.
Opinionated.
I do like crushed haddock.
And passionate.
I took a piece of haddock one time and I ran over it with a tire.
More headlines in 30
minutes. It's like a haddock pancake.
Zolak and Bertrand. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Look, they just have to clean up a few little things and they could actually pull out this win. Number 3, the bench production. Where has Grant Williams been? Mm. Derek White, Peyton Pritchard. Those are the guys that are coming in. We look at Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. Both of those guys play 40-plus minutes because you're not getting bench production. Grant Williams, he has been very key throughout this entire postseason and has had zero impact thus far on these finals. At number 2, pop it up here. Here we go. Communicate defensively. Too many breakdowns for the Celtics on the defensive side of things. You cannot do that against the Golden State Warriors. Why? They're going to make you pay. Number 1, no sloppy turnovers, right? We heard the legend Doris Burke on the call saying about the turnovers and things of that nature. You cannot have turnovers, unforced turnovers at that, when you work so hard on the defensive side of things to get stops. It's like when you have Steph Curry go 0-for-9 and you're making him miss and you're getting stops, the worst thing in the world that you want offensively is to have sloppy turnovers.
Thank you, Kendrick Perkins. By the way, Zoe can't speak for a moment because he's still finishing his lobster roll. So let me tell you that National Delicious. Lobster Day.
My God.
Is today? Today,
yeah,
National
today is National Lobster Day.
Should be
National
every day.
Lobster Day. So please, I'm begging you, don't.
Tyler, give me some water,
anymore.
Please.
Seriously. Lobster rolls from Atlantic Fish Company steps from the Boston Marathon.
Mm-hmm.
A Back Bay landmark for fresh seafood for decades.
I've eaten there, and they have fantastic fried fish and chips. Fantastic.
How's the lobster roll? You've already had 2.
Great.
I'm on
it's
my third.
Stuck in my teeth.
Yeah.
Well, they're
delicious.
They're like slider size.
Yeah.
They're sliders.
Okay.
They travel well.
Yeah. Oh, good.
Grabbing 2 in every break.
It's hard to travel a good... sorry. It's hard to travel a good lobster...
Agreed.
Lobster in here. Yep. You know, in a hot dog bun, because it gets all soggy. Mm-hmm. It's better on the brioche.
Yeah. Slider's a good approach for this.
Yep.
There
well
you go.
Out.
There you go.
And Hardy doesn't eat shellfish.
I don't.
Disgusting.
I eat very little seafood. I can do
the hell's wrong.
I was with him at Joe's Crab down in Miami. We have a massive platter of stone crab claws.
Oh, he
I
must
ate
have had a joy.
He was so miserable.
I wasn't miserable.
I got miserable. The chicken.
I got the fried chicken. It was delicious. I'll eat
What's wrong with you?
I'll eat sushi, but I won't eat
I don't get that.
Cooked
I don't
seafood.
Get the people who don't. I know so many people who don't eat seafood, but they're like, I'll eat sushi.
It's not as fishy.
Because it doesn't taste like fish.
Which is why I don't like sushi, but I like everything else.
Yeah, you could doctor
I
up.
Don't I'm like the taste of fish.
A little soy sauce, a little ginger.
You know, but you like it
if
uncooked.
You have to doctor it up all that much.
There he goes.
Look, look.
Yep.
Starting to raise his voice
yep.
again.
He's starting to get a little angry.
I'm not angry.
And sneaky a-hole.
Sneaky.
I'm not sneaky about it. That's the most offensive thing. When people call me a sneaky prick or a sneaky a-hole, I don't think I'm sneaky at all.
That's true.
I think
you're
I'm
not
right
as
out there
as you
with
used
it.
To be.
I feel the same way about myself.
What? What do you want?
Oh, no, you're just a straight a-hole.
Do you think I'm sneaky about it, Zoe, or do you think I'm up front? With my...
He's front, up front, Dick.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Not sneaky.
Thank you.
He tells like it is.
I appreciate you. Yep. Thank you.
Yeah, I'd rather know than be sneaky and like, hey, be... Right. Are those behind my back?
No, no, I'm right up front. Thank you, Kendrick Perkins, for making the turnovers number one in your things that the Celtics need to do tomorrow night in order to force a game seven. When he's talking about the breakdowns on defense, I guess I know that Steph Curry is probably going to get loose now, even though he did not make a three-pointer, which is just mind-boggling in game five. He's still going to get as open as he needs to get open to take shots. So I don't even view that as a defensive breakdown. Sometimes dropping back. We've seen Robert Williams do it. We've seen Al Horford do it. Coming off a screen when you're supposed to be on a switch, but they're playing a little too far off. You can't play far off at all against Steph Curry. Technically, I guess, a bit of a breakdown. But to me, it's 1, 2, and 3. Turnovers, turnovers, turnovers. You can't turn the ball over tomorrow night and force a game seven. You can't do it. It is now just gospel. 16 turnovers or more, you lose the game. And you should. I mean, between Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown and Marcus Smart turning the ball over, what was it, 14 times between those three guys the other night? Turnovers. Thank you, Perk, for making it number one. I think it should be 1, 2, and 3.
They're nearly unbeatable when they don't turn the ball over. I mean, it's really that simple. And when they turn it over, they lose. Frankly, I mean, if you turn it over 15 times in a game, I still feel like you should lose. I don't know. Which just goes to show how good they actually can be.
Yeah.
If we're talking about 16 turnovers being this great dividing line, in the playoffs, I feel like, shouldn't that be a little bit less? But that's how good they can be. That's their ceiling. Their ceiling is so high. Just hold on to the basketball, please. For the love of God.
That's one thing Golden State's done really well the last couple games is they picked your pocket. Their hands are more active than yours. I don't know if that's an exhaustion thing or is that mental fatigue, which if you have mental fatigue, you do have physical fatigue because it affects both. They're not playing the same style defense they played with. They aren't. And that's part of turnovers. You get that in their transition game. When they went on that run the other night, they were in transition. Now, Tatum hit 3 threes in a row, but they were doing it in transition. So run tomorrow night. And look at that guy sitting next to Wick over there. Kevin Garnett, play defense for that guy, the way that guy, the tenacity that he had when he played and won a championship.
See,
do you really think it's defense, though?
No, I think they played pretty well defensively in this series. When you're holding Golden State to just over 100 in these games, that feels pretty good to me.
You're playing good defense on Wiggins?
Right.
I don't think so.
I mean, there have been some lapses on Curry, don't get me wrong, but...
They're tiny, like, millisecond lapses.
And that's just how good he is.
Right.
You know what? Sometimes he's going to hit a shot. You just tip your cap.
Curry couldn't do anything, and you lost to them. But yet, Curry could hit, and he's scoring, what? I know he had 43 in game five, but I'm talking at game one when he had 6 in the first quarter. You still beat him.
I'm not worried about them defensively. Their problems start on the offensive end. Defensively, that's been there. That's been a constant. I mean, have there been too many games where you're like, man, the Celtics really weren't that engaged defensively in this playoff run? No, it starts on the offensive end with the turnovers. It's because Jaylen Brown, for the love of God, can't dribble, and Jason Tatum keeps trying to force bad passes.
Is there a lineup change tomorrow night? Can't be, right?
I don't think so.
I don't see
Horford's an offensive big. You can't take Robert Williams off the court. So you're not taking the other three off.
No.
Yeah, I've heard people say, oh, you got to play Derek White more. Let him handle the ball more.
Are you already making a pick for tomorrow night?
Yeah, I got Golden State.
Yeah, I do too.
I said that before the series. I said Golden State in six. Why would I change my prediction?
Okay, so there's somebody who agrees with you who I have not seen chime in on the Celtics series yet.
Who?
Karen Garigian.
Oh, Karen, hello.
Right. Lockstep with you and McTakey over there.
Karen and I got a lot in common. Like, she thinks the Golden State in six, and she has all those wild animals at her house. Bears, turkeys.
We all know the Celtics have overcome quite a bit to get to this point. They fought back against the Bucks. They won Game 7 in Miami. And they completely turned their season around before they even reached the playoffs. So they're no strangers to be able to dig deep and change the narrative. It's been their calling card. But now, back in a do-or-die situation against the Warriors, do they have another magical burst in them, starting with Game 6 in Boston Thursday night? Doesn't seem likely. Oh, Karen.
Oh.
Oh, Karen. Hello.
What are you doing? Based on their uneven performance in the last pivotal game, their inability to shed bad habits, and their lack of urgency at different points, this might be one obstacle they can't overcome. The biggest problem is it's hard to tell which Celtics team is going to show up one quarter to the next. Oh, that's true. Much less one game to the next. Their inconsistency has been maddening. In this series in particular, their self-inflicted wounds and careless play have been deadly. So Karen Garigian says, nope, that's it.
Yeah.
The clock has struck midnight. That's done. They don't have any more magic left in them. I think it's one more. I think it's one more tomorrow night at the Garden. Just from a scheduling and from a personal standpoint, if they're going to end up losing, how about you just end up losing tomorrow night, and that way we don't have to have it going on at the same time as the U.S. Open.
Yeah, Sunday at the U.S. Open. I would. Yeah. No.
Long
5
day.
O'clock here for me, Hardy, on Sunday.
I mean, I'm up at 5 a.m. on Sunday to get to, you know, to get to the Open by 7 a.m. for a special two-hour edition of the Sports Hub Golf Club live in Brookline.
You're going to have a co-host for that?
Tony Maserati.
There you go.
And but then thinking about...
he doesn't work either. Huh?
A 9 o'clock start on Sunday night after... That's a long day. That's a long day. But I still think they win tomorrow night. And I love game sevens in any sport, man. It has to be a coin flip when you get to that point. It's got to be. You're forced to game seven. You need one more bit of magic, and then you flip the coin. But you don't think so, though.
I don't think so. I think they're done.
McTakey, you think they're done.
I had the Celtics in six entering the series, but the way they closed out game four and the way they played game five.
These last two games.
They're done. They quit at the end of game five. They flat out quit. They're done.
I think they got one more in them. I think they got one more in them tomorrow night. I think they clean up the turnovers tomorrow night, and you see a different team from score.
Do you think they're going to quit at home?
No, I don't think they're going to quit. I just think they got obviously too much to handle. Like, Klay Thompson starting to get it going. Wiggins really has a level of confidence now that he didn't have early in his series. You think Curry's going to shoot like that again the other night?
Self-doubt has crept in, without a doubt. And I think maybe even for the first time. And listen, they had a bad game against Milwaukee in Game 5, but I didn't feel like self doubt crept in.
Tatum and Brown have no answer right now.
Right,
and I think Marcus Smart has a ceiling, and Al's not giving you much on offense right now, like he did early in the series.
Horford's disappeared.
Yes, he's disappeared in the series.
Williams
is playing about as good as he can.
Yeah.
That's the one guy I thought that maybe between Al and Grant Williams, you would see it. And you kind of saw them trying different guys, like shooting the ball.
It's all hands on deck, though.
It's like, all right, Tatum can't get one to drop. Jalen can't get one to drop. Al, you want to try a couple? No. Grant, you want to try a three-pointer, see if they're going to fall?
He's been really bad.
And I mentioned this yesterday. This has been more of a team than other teams you see make it this far into the finals, right?
I think they've gotten here based on their role players, you could argue.
But the problem is they kind of rise and fall together.
Yep.
It's very seldom does one guy just elevate. It happened with Horford earlier in the playoffs. We saw him elevate for like one game, but generally this team kind of rises and falls together, and they all fell together in game five.
That was the scary thing the other night. You know, Curry didn't have anything. Nothing. Yep. His head was hanging the entire time, but yet that whole team picked him up.
How about Stephen A. Smith? Does he give him a chance? We'll find out when we continue here after the headlines on Zolak and Bertrand.
Hey there, Boston. This is Noah Barney from North Attleboro. This year, I will be running not just one marathon, but I'm attempting to complete all six world major marathons. And I'm proud to run the 2024 Boston Marathon to support Boston Scores, an amazing nonprofit that uses soccer and poetry to inspire and empower youth. As a former collegiate soccer player, I am honored to be part of the Boston Scores Marathon team and support free after-school and summer learning programs for 1,500 local students each year. Learn more and support my run today at Boston Scores. .org/Noah.
Zolak.
Here's a question. Yeah. Does that attract the female or the male?
Bertrand.
That seems unlikely just based on you don't think a turkey can go that fast.
Zolak and Bertrand. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
And I think that when, you know, using baseball parlance, talking about the home run, the three-point shot is the home run for the Golden State Warriors because of the manner in which it appears to galvanize everybody and really elevate their level of intensity. When they're hitting threes, they're looking to blow you out of building. They're like piranhas coming at you. All of a sudden, everybody gets hyped because they feed off of it. It's not to say that, you know what, they don't bring that defensive intensity for the most part. But when you score a three-pointer as opposed to a two-pointer, Golden State seems to feed off of that better than any team in the NBA. It just seems to do something to them, to heighten their level of adrenaline and tenacity and to make them come at you in a certain way. And so when you have only Klay Thompson hitting three-pointers and you're getting that level of production from nobody else, there's a reason that Boston was able to come back after halftime and turn a 12-point deficit into a 5-point lead. There's a reason that Boston seemed within striking distance. There's a reason that Boston came out and was able to score 10 straight points. Something, somehow, some way, as they continue to scratch and claw and remain in it, when you're neutralizing Golden State from hitting those three-point shots, it gives Boston that much of a chance.
Stephen A. doesn't think they're dead. Zolak and Bertrand. McCarthy's here. The three-point shots, you have to make your peace with it, and you have to make your peace with a couple of other things going on with this series and the league in general. Number one, Stephen A. still thinks they have a chance, and he brings up some good points. It has a lot to do with three-point shooting, which should have played a role the other night when Steph Curry didn't hit any, but the Celtics didn't hit any of their first 12 attempts either, and that kind of put them in a hole that they couldn't dig themselves out of. The other thing I think you have to make your peace with in this, though, is the complaining to the officials.
Which isn't going to change. Oh. And that's the most annoying part. Tatum does it every play. Grant Williams, how many times has he put his hands out and walk over to the ref? He grabbed my arm. Didn't you see him grab my arm?
I would never, ever give Grant Williams a foul call, ever.
Did you see Ime Udoka going, please shut your mouth. Just shut up. So shut up.
Jeff Van Gundy had something to say about this, too.
I have no problem with people scrutinizing officiating. They have a huge impact on who wins and who loses. They're all highly compensated. They're the tops in their profession. So I think it's fair game to scrutinize them. But I do believe that teams have allowed far too much confrontational and aggressive conversations. I do not remember like walking onto the court and holding a conference at mid-court time after time. Like, it's happening almost every time out. And I think for the Celtics last night, I think what they have to do is really ask themselves, does our constant complaining, discussion, however you want to term it, does it give ourselves our best chance to play our best game? And some guys can play very well running their mouth to the officials. Other guys can be distracted very easily. And so I think it's incumbent on the Celtics to really look at how their behavior is impacting their performance. In their eyes, maybe it isn't at all. Or maybe as they study it, it's had an unnecessary negative impact on how they've played.
I wish they were doing big studies on it because something would tell me that it's not helping you.
I'm glad it came from Van Gundy. That's a guy, doing the series that does does a national broadcast right. on these national games. This is the NBA Finals. He's on there with Breenan Jackson. He's coached. He knows the league. Yeah, he doesn't get every call right, too. And I say, oh, that's a charger. That's a foul. Then he goes back and looks at, oh, you want to correct yourself? Jackson will get him. And they'll go back and forth. This isn't someone from 98.5 saying, oh, let's get numbers. Yep. You say that they bitch too much about the. No, that's a national guy saying all they do is complain. I don't know how you complain. Again, you shot 16 more foul shots the other night. They called the refs that you think suck. Called 12 more fouls against Golden State the other night. What are you going to do tomorrow night? You going to bitch more? Or are you going to go play ball?
Oh, they'll bitch more because that's
you there. Why do you think Marcus Smart didn't get that call when he got, yeah, when he got pushed off on, went down to his butt, but then slid about 10 to 12 feet.
When he was launched out of a cannon by
Yeah,
Clay
like he was
Thompson.
Launched out of a cannon by, it was it a push off by Clay Thompson? Yes. Yeah. If Smart would have went just flat down, and you look at the ref, he's looking right at him, and he's like, I'm not giving that to you. You just slid across the court.
Yeah, it looks like a scene from the new Jackass movie. And he's like Johnny Knoxville getting fired out of a cannon.
They're all babies. Same thing, Golden State bitches, too.
I don't mind.
Draymond Green, all he does is complain.
I don't mind the three-point shooting. I don't mind your team losing. What inhibits my ability to watch these games is when everyone gets involved. It's the players. It's the coaches. It's Ime Udoka. It's Steve Kerr. It's Draymond Green begging for him to review it and then literally stomping his feet like a two-year-old to the point where Steve Kerr acquiesces and says, okay, yeah, let's review that one. And guess what? It's upheld.
Kerr had to do it to shut him up.
It makes you not want to watch.
Yeah.
This is the problem that I think...
This is the bad part about the league.
This is the problem that the NBA has right now. We talk about the problems with baseball and the pace of play. Talk about football and how their review... This is the problem. This is why I said yesterday and why I'll say it again right now. I'm looking forward to the end of this series because there is less and less to like about... Not personally, not as just the product.
The style.
The longer it goes, and so much of it has to do with what Van Gundy is just talking about. The constant arms out, what is that? The complaining, the conferences at half court, coming across the coach's line, getting teed up, asking for reviews. I don't want to watch it.
Remember game one?
I don't. I want it to be done.
Remember how good game one was? How an enjoyable viewing product that was? They ate the whistles. Nobody bitched. And it was just up and down the court. It's like you're at a tennis match going left, right, left, right.
It's great.
Like, I couldn't go to bed after. I'm like, holy crap. That's another level. It hasn't been the same since then.
If you give me something more like that tomorrow night, like it was in game one, I'll be begging for more basketball, right? Expand the playoffs. Do more. Give me more. After that performance from both sides, players, coaches, everything, wow! I've reached the point where I want this to be over. I'm ready.
Say they extend this to Game 7, and you're at the Open in Brookline. Yeah. Are you gonna watch it on Sarge's phone?
Well, number one,
the finals.
The
Sarge Sarge is there. He's there every day, tweeting about it.
Yes, the game will be on much later than they will be playing golf. So I don't think it's going to be an issue. I know what you're trying to do. I'm not going to let you do it.
Okay.
Okay? You're trolling.
Who's Sarge covering the Open for?
I mean,
look at his tweets. Tweet of the leaderboard. It's time tomorrow. Be big names up there.
You want to talk about the U.S. Open?
Let's talk about it.
I would like to talk about
LIV.
It.
All right. Because that's still in the news.
Everyone's getting asked about it. And there's thoughts from Jason Mastrodonato on Phil Mickelson and... what he had to say. He spoke for a long time yesterday, 30 minutes. Boy, you think Tom Brady got thrown to the wolves in his Deflategate press conference?
He did.
That was a Brady-like
get off the podium.
Thrown to the wolves that Phil Mickelson conducted. We'll talk about that when we continue here next.
Hey there, Boston. This is Noah Barney from North Attleboro. This year, I will be running not just one marathon, but I'm attempting to complete all six World Major Marathons. And I'm proud to run the 2024 Boston Marathon to support Boston Scores, an amazing nonprofit that uses soccer and poetry to inspire and empower youth. As a former collegiate soccer player, I am honored to be part of the Boston Scores Marathon team and support free after-school and summer learning programs for 1,500 local students each year. Learn more and support my run today at bostonscores.org/Noah.
They bring you insight like no one else can.
Rigmarole.
I don't think I can say it.
Zolak and Bertrand, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
As you know, you've been criticized by many people, as you referred to. New York Post, Brian Wacker, reported that the 9/11 families sent you and others a letter alluding, of course, to Osama bin Laden and the 15 of 19 hijackers that the Saudis, of course, sent, and that they say now you are a partner with them and you appear to be pleased in your business with them. Terry Strada is the person, of course, who wrote this letter, and her husband got on the plane in Boston that flew into the World Trade Center. And they say the deaths of your fellow Americans.
No, I've read all that. Is there a question in there?
Yes, there is. How do you explain to them, not to us, but to them, what you've decided to do?
I would say to the Strada family, I would say to everyone that has lost loved ones, lost friends in 9/11, that I have deep, deep empathy for them. I can't emphasize that enough. I have the deepest of sympathy and empathy for them.
Boy, makes Tom Brady at the podium for 25 minutes for Deflategate seem pretty easy by comparison.
Wow. Boy, she went at him, huh?
That was yesterday at the U.S. Open.
Fully loaded question.
In Brookline. Happening right now. Actually, tons of people out there already. Yesterday, the day before today, actual competition starts tomorrow with LIV golfers and the Saudi-backed LIV, which stands for 54, as we finally found out about a week ago. It's like, what, LIV? What?
Oh. I thought that. I thought that the whole time, too, because of the whole Super Bowl thing.
54 holes. Also, a birdie on every hole in par 72 of 54. Okay, whatever. Wacky team names, too. That'll be fun. What did we do? What are you doing? What are you doing?
You're taking money. That's what you're doing. Period.
There's two questions here about the LIV thing. Number one, the first one is easy. Zoe, I think you just answered. Why is Phil Mickelson, Bryson DeChambeau, Patrick Reed, Dustin Johnson, why do these guys defect, either resign from the PGA Tour or just accept that they won't be able to play in PGA Tour events to go play in the LIV? Why?
Dustin Johnson just made more money than Tiger Woods did in his entire career just by signing with him. Career earnings. Now, I'm not talking about what Tigers earned off the off the course.
No, I mean, Tiger's worth it. Tiger's now in the billion-dollar club along with Michael Jordan and LeBron James.
And we know they offered him somewhere near $1 billion to join also.
Correct.
But I mean, is this going to change your viewing experience this week? Or are you going to follow Phil around? You're not going to follow Phil around because, he sold out.
It might change the rooting interest for a few things. But I think that maybe the most interesting question about the LIV is, why are they doing it? Why are they putting on this golf tour? Why do it?
I don't know. It's something to do. They have money. They obviously have a lot of money.
I mean, hundreds of billions of dollars in the Saudi Sovereign Wealth Fund. They can keep this thing going for as long as they want. They can pay Phil Mickelson $200 million just to play in eight events and finish 10 over par, like I believe he did in the inaugural event last week. They can have nobody watch. Oh, they had 100,000 people streaming at the start of the YouTube stream. How many was it at the end? You know, a lot of people stream a lot of stuff right away, and then, like I did, for about 30 seconds to see what it looked like. I'm like, I don't know. I don't care. I don't care who wins this tournament. I don't care. I didn't watch it a second more after that. So they're not going to make money off of it. They're going to spend a lot of money, but they have even more. So why are they doing it?
For a hobby? I don't know, but this is not the USFL going up against the NFL. We're trying to say, okay, yeah, we're a whole nother league too. No, because we really don't have money and we have to play in one stadium. No, they have a ton of money. I don't understand. If you have a problem with it, change your business model. Then pay these guys more. Like, there are more golfers are going to jump once they start seeing the type of money that these guys are getting.
Okay.
I'm confused. I'm confused. And you started to look some stuff up because I heard Wallach and Rich and Fred talking about this morning. And they did about an hour and a half on this. And Wallach was reading from somewhere where these guys can play in the majors because the Masters is run by itself. The Open is open. You could have amateurs playing it.
You're talking about the U.S. Open.
Yes. The only major that they can't, the only big tournament they can't play in is the Tour Championship because that's only for players that are on the tour.
Well,
and the PGA.
They could still play in the British. They could still play in the Masters.
For now. Because they haven't said otherwise. The only one that's really had to answer so far is the U.S. Open because nobody had gone to play in an LIV event yet, and these guys had already gotten their invites, and the U.S. Open, the USGA issued a statement and said, we didn't think it'd be right to change the rules in the middle of the game.
That's fair.
And once you've already sent out the invites, the game is essentially already started. As far as we know, PGA Tour events, they're out. They're not going to be invited anymore. The Tour Championship is part of the PGA Tour. The one that they may have been talking about this morning is the PGA Championship, which is separate from the PGA Tour. That's
correct.
That's put on by the PGA of America. Obviously, closely affiliated with the PGA Tour, I wouldn't expect them to get invited to the PGA Championship, especially if they have resigned their membership from the PGA and the PGA Tour. So that one takes care of itself. The Masters can do whatever they want. The U.S. Open and the British Open, which is run by the Royal and Ancient, they can also do whatever they want, but they have long-standing rules in place that they came up with themselves for who gets invited.
You still want the best names and the biggest names in your tournament.
Yeah, of course they do.
Yeah.
But one of those things is like, all right, top money earners. From what? Well, from the PGA Tour and from the European Tour, which is now what, the DP World Tour,
something
I think it's
like
called?
That, yeah.
Okay. How does that... Are they going to recognize money earned on the LIV? Because that's going to blow up that entire calculus if they start including that money. Because these guys are making $4 million for winning some crap event that's only three rounds against 47 other guys.
There's no cut. You could finish 18 over and you're still getting paid.
Still making $120,000.
But even that, it's a format. It's 54.
You can finish DFL,
yes.
Right? In every tournament
on
the LIV, make almost $1 million on the LIV, and that's probably going to be close enough to get you invited by the way things. So they're going to have to change all that. They haven't said going forward that what the Masters is going to do. All they've said is we're not saying yet. Now, unless there was something new that I have not seen pop up, we don't know about the Masters. Probably the British, the guys who are already going to get in, they're probably still going to play. But going forward, like next year for the U.S. Open, the British Open, and obviously for the Masters next year, it's a lot of wait and see. The thing that I keep coming back to is, why are they doing this? Are they doing it? I mean, are they doing it to kind of sport wash the image of the Saudis? You know, we've seen this before with other countries trying to like, look, we're not so bad. Look at this great athlete that we have come out here. Look at this great tour that we're putting on. What's so bad? How can we be bad when we're doing this great golf thing?
Everybody loves sports.
Right?
Here's our gymnastics team.
We could build the biggest hotel. We could do anything we want because we have money.
The other, the side where you really get into it is like, well, we're gonna host a couple of tournaments at certain golf courses. What are those golf courses charging the LIV to host their tournament there?
Right.
What
doesn't the tournament? Doesn't the tournament? Doesn't the tour having a tournament in Saudi Arabia this year?
The PGA Tour?
Yeah. Isn't there a PGA Tour event in Saudi Arabia?
No.
I thought there was.
I don't think so.
Okay. See, I mean, there's so many damn questions about it, but
the one thing, so you know what everybody's talking about. Like, if there is a couple of golf courses may be owned by a certain former president.
Right.
And they're hosting LIV events. Been talking about this morning is the PGA Championship, which is separate from the PGA Tour. That's
correct.
That's put on by the PGA of America. Obviously, closely affiliated with the PGA Tour, I wouldn't expect them to get invited to the PGA Championship, especially if they have resigned their membership from the PGA and the PGA Tour. So that one takes care of itself. The Masters can do whatever they want. The U.S. Open and the British Open, which is run by the Royal and Ancient, they can also do whatever they want, but they have long-standing rules in place that they came up with themselves for who gets invited.
You still want the best names and the biggest names in your tournament.
Yeah, of course they do.
Yeah.
But one of those things is like, all right, top money earners. From what? Well, from the PGA Tour and from the European Tour, which is now what, the DP World Tour,
something
I think it's
like
called?
That, yeah.
Okay. How does that... Are they going to recognize money earned on the LIV? Because that's going to blow up that entire calculus if they start including that money. Because these guys are making $4 million for winning some crap event that's only three rounds against 47 other guys.
There's no cut. You could finish 18 over and you're still getting paid.
Still making $120,000.
But even that, it's a format. It's 54.
You can finish DFL,
yes.
Right? In every tournament
on
the LIV, make almost $1 million on the LIV, and that's probably going to be close enough to get you invited by the way things. So they're going to have to change all that. They haven't said going forward that what the Masters is going to do. All they've said is we're not saying yet. Now, unless there was something new that I have not seen pop up, we don't know about the Masters. Probably the British, the guys who are already going to get in, they're probably still going to play. But going forward, like next year for the U.S. Open, the British Open, and obviously for the Masters next year, it's a lot of wait and see. The thing that I keep coming back to is, why are they doing this? Are they doing it? I mean, are they doing it to kind of sport wash the image of the Saudis? You know, we've seen this before with other countries trying to like, look, we're not so bad. Look at this great athlete that we have come out here. Look at this great tour that we're putting on. What's so bad? How can we be bad when we're doing this great golf thing?
Everybody loves sports.
Right?
Here's our gymnastics team.
We could build the biggest hotel. We could do anything we want because we have money.
The other, the side where you really get into it is like, well, we're gonna host a couple of tournaments at certain golf courses. What are those golf courses charging the LIV to host their tournament there?
Right.
What
doesn't the tournament? The tour having a tournament in Saudi Arabia this year?
The PGA Tour?
Yeah. Isn't there a PGA Tour event in Saudi Arabia?
No.
I thought there was.
I don't think so.
Okay. See, I mean, there's so many damn questions about it,
just the one thing, so you know what everybody's talking about. Like, if there is a couple of golf courses maybe owned by a certain former president,
right,
and they're hosting LIV events, how much money goes to that golf course and to the golf course owner by virtue of hosting the tournament there?
Good question.
Is it $20,000 or is it $200 million? This is the stuff that people have questions about, and they're like, well, wait a second. Wait, you want to know where the money's coming from and what these people are about? Where's the money going?
Yeah.
that's maybe another question that... Phil Mickelson isn't prepared to answer.
How do you make money off it?
They're not going to make any money off
who's
of it.
Who's sponsoring it? What commercials are you going to run? The cool thing about the Masters is if like you're in it, you win, you always get invited back. Like now all of a sudden you're going to tell Phil he can't ever come back and play Augusta?
I don't know what they're going to tell him. They love the tradition with their former champions coming back.
Can't break that.
Nice little dinner.
That's what you got going.
Champions dinner, all that stuff. But what also happens in 5 years from now when the Saudis get bored with their little LIV tour that, wow, not only is this not making money, it's costing a lot to keep that.
Buy a basketball league. Form one of those. Buy a football league. I don't know. I'm with you.
But what do the players do?
Right. Sustainability. Sure.
Some of the younger guys, they got a big chunk of change, but they can still play golf and they want to be able to come play back on the PGA Tour. Are they going to be allowed? Is it going to be worth it to them? Do they care anymore because they've already banked so much money?
See, the players probably won't because I think this is why they're jumping, because it's life-changing money that you're guaranteed. You know, the day you sign, you're getting paid. The problem is, from now, a couple of years, like once you get past the Tigers, the Phils, and all that, the name recognition of golf, and we've talked about this, the popularity of it, and like people that like golf are going to watch golf. I get that. You're going to follow it. But if you got big-time stars jumping over there and you're not going to allow them back in, not that people are going to run to watch the LIV. I'm not going to go on YouTube. I'm not going to stream that. But I'm sure as hell not going to watch Rory McIlroy tee it up freaking 18 times or whatever on a weekend. That doesn't draw me in.
We got a bunch of calls on this. We'll get to them next. 90 seconds, no commercials.
Hey there, Boston. This is Noah Barney from North Attleboro. This year, I will be running not just one marathon, but I'm attempting to complete all six world major marathons. And I'm proud to run the 2024 Boston Marathon to support Boston Scores, an amazing nonprofit that uses soccer and poetry to inspire and empower youth. As a former collegiate soccer player, I am honored to be part of the Boston Scores Marathon team and support free after-school and summer learning programs for 1,500 local students each year. Learn more and support my run today at Boston Scores.org/Noah.